Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. It is a Tuesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So I had a realization sometimes on off days when the Astros aren't playing, I just kind of think about random things. And the more and more I got to thinking about the Houston Astros roster, and I kind of went in the weeds here a little bit, the 26-man roster.
You were digging again?
Deep diving? Yeah. What's that?
Deep diving?
Sort of. It's kind of surface level. I was kind of on the surface more than like the actual deep dive. But we know that Jake Meyers is back, right?
Yep.
Jake Meyers is back. Which, where do we stand on Jake Meyers? What do you think of Jake coming off the labrum into his second season as an Astro?
Hasn't been impressive, but the fact that he had a multi-hit game and looks like he's not completely lost offensively. Although I do have some concerns defensively, because there was that ball in the gap that looked like he could have caught that he just kind of hit the brakes on, like he was worried about hitting the wall.
Yeah, so I have takes on that,
okay,
too. I feel like he has a little bit of PTSD,
yep,
about the wall.
I would agree with that.
Remember the first play back? At least with the Astros. I don't know if he was catching balls against the wall there at Constellation Field with the Sugar Land Space Cowboys. But the very first ball that he had to go back on, where like the wall came into play, like he caught it, but he kind of grazed the wall, mm-hmm, and he looked super annoyed. And then everything, as soon as he touches the track going back, I have noticed him kind of pulling up and a little fearful of the wall, which I can understand, but you hope that goes away.
You got to get over it, right? Because at a certain point, your pitching staff's going to get a little annoyed too, whether it's you're working on another no-hitter or not. That's a ball in the gap that should be caught. That shouldn't be a guy in scoring position immediately with a ground rule double.
Yeah, so that is something that I noticed. I'm about where you are with Jake. I think he's got a chance to be a pretty good player. I think he was a pretty good player last year, mm-hmm, with the Astros. So, you know, you have to give him, you know, the benefit of the doubt, I think, to come out of this to see. Look, the trade deadline's on August 2nd, so you have a good window of time to see what Jake Meyers is going to be. You can take a look for 3 or 4 weeks, him against Major League Baseball pitching, to see how much faith you have in him. But I think right now, as we talk today, and I believe that the roster moves after Jake Meyers got called up, shows me that the Astros are more confident in Jake Meyers than Yuli Gurriel. Because the Astros have had all season long to have J.J. Mattejewicz on this roster as opposed to Chaz McCormick, as opposed to Jose Siri. And before you say, well, you got to have two center fielders, where Mauricio Dubon,
right,
plays center field as well. So you could have had J.J. up on the roster as opposed to Siri, as opposed to Chaz, because of Dubon's flexibility and the ability to play center field. And if we're being completely honest, he is the second center fielder currently on this team, because Chaz is gone, because Siri's gone. So Jake's your starter, Dubon's your backup in center field. So you had all year to do that, but you never did. And the first time that you do choose J.J. to be on the 26 over not only Siri, but over Chaz as well, the both of them, is once Jake Meyers comes back. That, to me, is a huge tell and a huge sign that the Astros have more confidence in Jake Meyers from now through the rest of this season than they do Yuli Gurriel from now until the rest of the season.
I would counter that by saying maybe they have more invested in the long term, because they know Yuli's days are numbered, whether he fights his way out of this offensive slump or not. You're not going to have him around for much more. Whereas
this is it.
Everything that we've seen and heard from James Click to back up what we've already kind of been led to believe is Jake Meyers is your center fielder of the future,
uh-huh,
and Jake Meyers is also your center fielder of now. So there's a lot more wiggle room, and there's a lot more reason why you're going to lean his way, because there's more years left in the tank and there's more of an overall big picture role for Jake Meyers.
I think both of those things can be true, because you're right. I mean, Jake Meyers, you have more invested long term in him than you do Yuli. We all know Yuli's in the final year of his deal. There's some that are clamoring for him not to be the starting everyday first baseman for this year's Houston Astros once the trade deadline hits on August 2nd. There's also some people clamoring for a center fielder and an upgrade in center field as well. So you do see, you know, some pockets of Astro fans that want first base, some pockets of Astro fans that rather have center field, what you prioritize over the two. But as you look at, because to me it's secondary, because Jake Meyers is a starting center fielder right now. Yuli's the starting first baseman right now. But the fact that you have a left-handed hitting first baseman and you choose to keep him over both Chaz and Siri for the first time all season once Jake Meyers comes back is, to me, a huge tell where the Astros think of Yuli Gurriel. That you need somebody, and like people are going to say, well, you need a left-handed bat off the bench late in games. When does Dusty Baker pinch hit for Maldonado with anybody not named Jason Castro? Like, Aledmys Diaz is a better hitter than Jason Castro, and Dusty refuses to do that.
Remind me of things that annoy me so much.
Using Castro?
Yeah. When you have other solid bats on the bench that are ready to go,
yeah,
right-handed and left-handed, and he goes to Castro, it drives me nuts. You can hit someone else. What are you worried about? You lose them because then Castro has to go behind the plate? You're not going 4 or 5 extra innings normally. God, that chaps my ass.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And, like, the arguments that I hear, well, you know, you don't want to lose a position player unless it go, you know, in case it goes into extra innings. Well, you figure it out once you get to extra innings, and with the current gimmicky extra inning rule in baseball, you really don't need those players anyways in case of an emergency. Like, and the Astros are also 10 games up in the AL West. Like, if you get to a spot like that, then okay, then you just kind of tank that game. You put some random player out in the outfield. But the fact that James Click, I don't know if Dusty Baker, how much he's involved. How much do you think Dusty's involved with the 26-man roster? I don't think he has
a
whole
lot
of say.
I think he wants to be, but he's not.
Like, he clamors all the time about a left-handed reliever. He does not have a left-handed reliever. I don't think he has much say. They might pick his brain. They might get his opinion. But I don't think Dusty Baker has any say over the 26-man roster. Now, game day, and you know, who plays, lineups, there's probably a lot of conversations. But ultimately, I think Dusty has the final say when it comes to that. But for the first time all year, once Jake Meyers came back, they chose to have J.J. Mattejewicz on this roster over Chaz McCormick and over Jose Siri. So that shows you that Jake Meyers is going to get a majority of the starts in center field, if not all of the starts in center field, where I really think they're going to start looking at opportunities to play and start J.J. Mattejewicz over at first base, which to me is a tell that Yuli Gurriel's days, well, I still think he's going to be an Astro, that his days as the starting first baseman for the Houston Astros are nearing an end.
I think it's possible. And like I said, you know, here's the thing too, Jeremy. I think the first part of this is they've got to let Castro fade into the sunset sooner rather than later. His last year. This should be his last half a year. Like, you should find a place in the organization for him. You should find a way for him to fade into the sunset and not be embarrassed. But the fact is, it's embarrassing every single time Dusty calls his number. And it's not just offensively, because last year we got that little, that kind of fad thing of Castro the Astro, because he got a couple of, you know, nice step-up hits in late in games. But overall, we know who he is because it's what he's always been. He's been the second coming of Brad Ausmus offensively, and he's not as good defensively. And when you look at him defensively, as soon as they make the switch, teams know if they get a guy on, they're going to steal because he's not going to throw him out. He threw one into center field the other day.
Maybe better not throwing it.
Yeah, I just think that overall, at least you could say, well, we're leaning on him for his defense. Now you can't lean on him at all because you're going to fall flat on your face. It's time for him to go first. And then when you look at it, if it continues to get bad, and the problem that I think even Click, because I know Dusty feels this, but the where Click is kind of feeling it too is because as much as Click is straight hardball numbers guy, he knows what Yuli means to this fan base and this organization for what he's done in a short period of time.
No doubt.
So he's trying to avoid that tough decision, but as long as Yuli's really scuffling, it's easy. But then all of a sudden he hits another double, or he gets a two-hit game, or he does a few things here and there that he goes where he starts going, okay, maybe I better wait a little while longer. I got some time. Sooner or later, you're not going to have any more time.
He had a decent series against the Yankees. Yep. People are going to point, well, he had a couple extra base hits. He had that double down the line. He did. They weren't necessarily crushed off the bat. Somebody's texting in, 6389, JJ sucks, though. Let's trade for a first baseman. I don't know if Mattejewicz is going to suck as a Major League Baseball player, but I also would argue that the fact that he is currently on this 26-man over Siri and Chaz McCormick is a testament that the Astros are looking for improvement at the first base position, even if it's Mattejewicz starting once every third day against right-handed pitching. Like, you're looking to spot the starts for Yuli Gurriel. I would also argue, because they still have JJ on this roster over Chaz, over Siri, and they have more belief in Jake Meyers than they do Yuli Gurriel, I think that is also a sign that they're going to be looking to upgrade at first base outside of the organization.
I think part of the reason, too, Jeremy, is like we said, you have solutions internal in a couple of these areas, but you also have guys that are showing signs of life. You were a little concerned about Bregman at third. He's showing you signs of life. Because they're so high on Jake Meyers, that's their solution, that they don't have to do much more in center field unless an offer comes along with a Cedric Mullins or something that just knocks you off your feet and you go, I got to do that. Catcher, you know you're not doing anything, and if you had any doubts about it after this weekend, the way he got credit for managing the pitching staff, Maldi staying behind the dish, and that's done. So first base and bullpen are the two areas in which he might have to go external to go get help. So when you look at it and you say, you could prioritize it either way, but at least you've narrowed it down to the one area that you feel like could make a difference where you have to go and possibly orchestrate a deal to give something up to go get something. And I think that there's enough first baseman out there that you can find someone. You're not going to be in a bidding war like you'd be with Contreras or some of the guys you were looking at before.
I think that there's more available in the first base market via trade coming up in July and leading into the August 2nd deadline than there is center fielders. Like I heard the name Andrew Benintendi floated around, which I think Benintendi's like, I mean, he's an upgrade offensively, I believe. I think slightly. I don't think it's a huge upgrade over Jake Myers. But right now, Myers coming off the injury, being an unknown off the torn labrum, I would give Benintendi the edge over Jake Myers. But what you lose there is defense.
Yep.
Like Benintendi's only a left fielder and an average left fielder at that. Now you're talking about moving Michael Brantley, who is an older player, playing right field, and now moving Tucker, who's one of the best defensive right fielders, to center field, where the numbers would tell you he's average at best. So, like, does Benintendi give you as much, like, an upgrade of a bat over Jake Myers as you are losing defensively? I would say no. Now, the avenue where I could see the Astros trading for a center fielder, because I still think they'll look there. I think they'll kick the tires there. I agree with you that first base relief pitching is higher on the priority list for the Houston Astros than center field. Mm-hmm. One of the things to keep in mind is that it is Michael Brantley's final year with the Houston Astros. So if you were to trade for a center fielder, it's not closing the door on Jake Myers as an Astro either. It's just kind of saying, okay, for the rest of the season, you're our fourth outfielder. So I could see the Astros looking for a center fielder under club control with the idea of you're going to play left field next season.
I think that's the one thing that everybody's got to keep in mind. This is never going to be a short-sighted general manager that's only thinking about the here and now. He is always contemplating the move as it relates to the here and now and how much of the future it's going to affect in a positive way. And when you look at a guy that you can bring in that's still fairly young, that can be an instant fix no matter where you put him in your lineup for this season, but has a role that he can play going forward, that's a win-win in James Click's mind. That's why you would go after that player. And if it's between him and somebody else, especially if that somebody else has less years left on the books or is an expiring contract or is a little older, he's always going to waver on the side or you know, fall to the side of the guy that's going to give me what I need now, but also has the possibility of being in our plans for the later.
I want to, and I think that we saw that with Luno. I think we'll see that in Click as well. And I want to address the catcher spot on the other side. Also, I also had another thought on an off day. That's
well,
gonna
you
be
were deep thoughts with Jeremy Branham,
This is what I do on off days. When there's not Astro baseball, it's just me and my thoughts. This is going to be an unpopular opinion. The Astros have a bad reputation with injuries. We know that, but they've never lied about it. It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. All of the distress that the Astros talk about, it leads me to a drink at the end of the day. It leads me to a drink at the end of the night. I will not deny that. Vodka, gin, bourbon, all part of the rotation for me. Sometimes I move up the vodka like the Astros move up Verlander. A local Texas brand, Gentle Bend Spirits, they do it all, and they do it better than anybody else. They use a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits using their state-of-the-art, innovative Percedo craft technology that is simply better in purity. It's better in aroma, and it's better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Gentle Bend is unrivaled. Look, I know you have your favorite brand that you like at the end of the night, but trust me now and thank me later. Take the challenge I did. Try a sip of Gentle Bend. Compare it to your brand. You're going to taste the huge difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Bend Spirits, A&M Class of 85, had me out to the tasting room in Alvin to see what I thought, and ever since then, I've been a Gentle Bend man. You can find Gentle Bend Vodka at Total Wine and Specs, also online, gentlebend.com. Also, head to their tasting room in Alvin. Try that delicious bourbon, 94 proof, winner of the double platinum at the Ascot Awards this year. Also, they'll be at Total Wine in Pearland on Thursday, June 30th, 4 through 7. Head on over there for the Meet the Maker event, the one and only. Ricky Ford will be there handing out samples, talking to you about the smooth spirits of Gentle Bend. Head over there June 30th. That's Thursday, 4 to 7. Gentle Bend, the union of tradition and invention.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Real quick on the catcher spot that you brought up about Jason Castro. I really believe that the Astros will have a different look behind the dish after the August 2nd trade deadline. I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be an upgrade over Maldonado. I think it's going to be the solution to kind of old yellering Jason Castro. I think that they trade for a backup catcher that they can trust a little bit more than Castro at this point. Give him an early retirement. Send him off well. Because, look, I don't think you're going to trade for a backup catcher that's a better bat, per se, than Castro. You're probably going to find, like, the equivalent of a Jason Castro bat. Maybe it's slightly better. But the point I'm trying to make is you're not going to pinch hit a backup catcher for Maldonado in the eighth inning. You're hoping that's Aledmys Diaz. You're hoping that if Mattejevic's still around, that it's him. You're hoping that if you have an upgrade at first base, maybe it's Yuli Gurriel in those late-inning pinch-hitting spots. But then you turn it over to that backup catcher. I think the Astros will make the upgrade. The reason they haven't yet, like, you're not going to call up Corey Lee or Diaz or Barry Hill and start their clock to play every fifth day. You know what right. I mean? Like, you don't. That's not the solution there. You have to bring in a veteran, and they just don't have that veteran in-house right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that Dusty would have made a lot more late-inning moves and had a lot more flexibility if he didn't have the limitations that Jason Castro brings to the table. And I think that it's okay, again, like we talk about all the time, it's a 162-game season. It's a dog days long, drawn-out season to where you're just trying to get through games and series and do what you need to do to give your team the best chance to win, though it's not the same kind of intensity or importance as the playoffs. It's a different ballgame, as we all know, in the playoffs, and that's when things change. And I think that that's where things have to change between now and the trade deadline, to where if they're going to have an option at catcher, the guy coming up behind Maldonado has to be somewhat of a stick.
See, I think it's hard to find a stick, and especially if like it's only like for one inning.
But what I'm saying is, because I know where you're going, but what I was going to say is a stick from the perspective of you can make contact. You might not be a 300 hitter, yeah, and you might not be a power bat. But when you need someone to put bat on baseball, like the situation that presented itself in New York, first and third with only one out, all I need you to do is give me a middle range fly ball or put something on the ground somewhere where it's not a routine double play ball to get a run in, because they can't do that with Castro. He's going to strike out.
Yeah. See, I think I value defense more than the bat there, but, I mean, you would love to have somebody that's like a 240 hitter but has contact, right? Because, like, if you're thinking late situations in the playoffs, let's look back last year. I mean, the Astros were using Aledmys Diaz to pinch hit for Martin Maldonado in close game late situations. So I envision that's going to be the case again this year. It's either Diaz, or if you trade for a first baseman, maybe Yuli's still on the roster and can, like, provide that role as well. And then whenever you turn it over to the ninth inning, you know what I don't want? I don't want a catcher that if somebody gets on first base, now you're just going to run at will all over me. Or you know what I really don't want? If it's a tie game, if you're down by a run or if you're up by a run, I don't want a catcher like Evan Gattis that can't block a ball in the dirt. You're giving away free bases. You're giving away 90 feet and things like that. So that's something that I think that the Astros will look for in a backup catcher ahead of the August 2nd trade deadline. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, so I was thinking about this yesterday. I think what inspired it was Lance McCullers and the fact that his road to recovery, and I heard Stanton on with the Will House say that, you know, it's not imminent with Lance McCullers, which we've been telling you that for a while. We're thinking maybe mid-August, best-case scenario for Lance McCullers.
I'm thinking,
that's not best-case scenario, though.
You're right.
That's more worst-case scenario.
We're not thinking about having him this year, but okay.
And that might not even be worst-case scenario. That might be plausible scenario. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To me, best-case scenario, he's back by mid-August. I think that would be fine, and then try to get him right. But looking at it, because Lance McCullers, whenever he had the sore right elbow last year, you know, they were vague with it, right? Michael Brantley left the game on Sunday against the Yankees with shoulder discomfort. We haven't heard another peep about what Michael Brantley had with that shoulder discomfort. Jeremy Peña left the game actually stayed in the game, but didn't start the next day and would go on the injured list when he dove on his left hand and did whatever he did with his thumb. And it's always discomfort this, discomfort that. They're always very vague about the injuries. But one thing I learned, and if you disagree with me, 713-780-3776, I haven't caught the Astros in a lie. I have, like, anytime you hear, like, Dusty Baker talked about Jeremy Peña, and he said, we avoided a bullet. Like, we dodged a bullet there. It's not serious. It's not the wrist. The MRI says that it's not severe. Even Jake Odorizzi, who got carted off the field when he rolled his ankle. They talked about him, and they said, look, we dodged a bullet there. It's not as severe as we thought. The MRI shows that it's
lower
good.
Leg discomfort.
Lower leg discomfort. Very vague. They're right. Always no, very, very vague.
I was going to say, it's generalizations. The one that I'll push back on you, though, is Chandler Rome versus the Houston Astros.
Are you talking about the Verlander?
The Verlander. Because he's the one that said he needs Tommy John. They're the ones that pushed back hard.
See, did they ever deny it, though?
They kind of did, and I don't have the exact quotes that I have to go back and research it, but they pushed back really hard on basically questioning Chandler Rome's journalistic approach and should he have even reported that and how wrong he was.
See, my recollection of that's a little bit different in that it was more Verlander's camp, not the
Verlander
Astros.
Verlander started it, right? Because he was like, I don't know where you got that to be able to say that.
Yep.
But then I thought the Astros kind of jumped on, too, going, you know, we I don't know how. Again, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth,
sure.
But I thought that they were kind of pushing back.
It's always been shady.
Yep.
It's always been very vague. The Justin Verlander, oh, does he need Tommy John? Doesn't need Tommy John. I don't remember the Astros ever saying that he doesn't and then that he did. Even if you go back to Lance McCullers last year with, like, the UCL. Well, he's, like, we don't know. We don't know if he will be available. But every time that they've said that we've dodged a bullet or that the MRI came back good, the Astros, at least this season, have been right. Their Jeremy Pena situation. We dodged a bullet there. The MRI doesn't show anything serious. Jake Odorizzi, when it looked like he tore his Achilles, got carted off the field whenever he tweaked his little, you know, ankle. They said there, we dodged a bullet. The MRI shows nothing serious. So I guess from my point of view, I think we can believe the Astros whenever they give you something definitive. Now, they're going to be vague. They're going to be gray. They're going to throw out the big nasty D word saying discomfort left and right. But I feel like whenever they make something definitive, that they're right. They haven't lied to us.
I mean, everybody has to change their ways after a while because maybe it's a guilty conscience or the fact that they just realize that they can't be continually to try to pull the wool over the eyes of everybody that's watching because we see it too. But yeah, they've been better this year. I mean, even with the Pena injuries for sure, because you know there's been a couple times with Pena with the lower leg injury and then the thumb to where you really could have been deeply concerned. There's no greater one than the Odorizzi. I think everybody initially, and again, because of their track record, the minute that they tried to put that out there about Odorizzi, it turns out they were right.
Sure.
But the way everybody saw that was, oh my God, there's been some in the past that we've wanted to question. This is so egregious that who the hell do they think they're fooling? And this time they were right.
Look, even the Yordan Alvarez, like with the hand, right? Like even then they were serious. They were like believable. They didn't lie to us. Now they were very vague and they didn't, you know, discomfort. It's the hand. Dusty didn't want to tell Chandler Rome at first, but then he tells Buster Olney, oh, we thought it could have been a Hammett injury, which is very common in baseball, a little hook bone right there in the palm of your hand. But then he told Buster Olney that that didn't show up in the X-ray, that we thought it could have been this, but it wasn't this. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when the Astros stand on the table and tell you one way, like if they're not being vague, if they're not being mysterious, if they're not like hinting at a certain thing, but whenever they tell you it's not serious, I'm going to start believing the Houston Astros because they've proven that this year, and even the Lance McCullers thing last year, they never gave you anything definitive. Like, you know what I mean? They never said something strong. They was always like, we don't know. We'll see. Which I think that might be a hint, too. It could be a tell. Whenever they're not telling you something, it could be serious. But whenever they're going to tell you, they've been believable.
Just by looking at what's happened, though, in the track record over the years prior to this year, you wonder why they try to be as vague as they are and speak in as many generalities as you are. It's not like Belichick, where you're trying to keep the defense planning for a quarterback that you know is not going to play or one of your key players, right? It's different when you start talking about first football first, even basketball, because it's so fast-paced and because your best players are so dominant. When you're talking about baseball, whether you're in or out doesn't make, unless it's a pitcher and you're loading up your lineup, he's right-handed and you want to load up your lineup with righties or something like that, or your ace, for the most part, it's not going to change anything that the way the other team prepares for you,
mm-hmm.
except for the fact that from a pitching and catching standpoint in the pregame meetings, you may look at it differently if Yordan's in and out of the lineup or a big bat.
See, that to me is weird whenever you're not being like completely transparent, completely honest, and that's kind of the vagueness. And they are like they have a bad reputation
like, what
for that.
Is the end result
no,
you're
no,
trying to get to?
I don't get that.
I don't
understand that, and I think it's a little bit foolish if I'm being completely honest. But whenever they say something, like whenever they stand on the table for something, it's not serious. It is this. They've not been wrong. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, the Rockets buying out John Wall yesterday. Let's discuss that. Also, do the Rockets get a free pass on the rest of the offseason? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7, that's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, the Rockets bought out John Wall. He is gone. Apparently going to sign
God.
With the Clippers. The Rockets are going to save $6.5 million after they agreed to the buyout of John Wall. $47.4 million he was on the contract for.
Wait, keep going. Overall, in his time as a Houston Rocket,
yeah.
he made over $85 million for yeah. doing what?
Nothing. I mean, I don't know how there was a way around it, though. Like, you could have had Russell Westbrook instead of John Wall, but you're still going to pay that much money, and you're not going to be better. And if you are better, I'm not sure that's a positive for the organization. So it was kind of it really was a sunk cost at that
point. I'm glad
point.
He's gone. And at addition by subtraction yet again, two of the three that I said had to go, and the two most volatile and possibly destructive are now gone. Eric Gordon, you're doing him a solid and hopefully getting something for him. But here's where I am on the Wall situation. I'm glad it's over. I'm glad he's done, and he won't be possibly negatively affecting this young squad. But if I'm Tillman Fertitta, one, I don't care what you want the reputation of you as a general manager to be, Rafael Stone. I'm not really giddy about paying almost $90 million out to a dude that we told to stay home or come in beach attire and play one-on-one with the kids on your off day. I also think that if a buyout, the way it was always kind of put in place to do, is a give and take. And both sides give to take what's best for them. From the Rockets' perspective, you're supposed to get money back. You get him off of your bench, and you allow him to go where he wants to play for a contender, but at a price. So you get some money back and you save some money, not just six, because here's the thing, John Wall's not missing a penny. John Wall gave up in a buyout exactly what he will sign the mid-level with the Clippers yeah. and not lose a single cent. That means he didn't give anything. If I'm the owner, I'm calling up Rafael and I'm going, could we not have at least gotten 10 or 15? Could we have not got something back? Because we're not going to get any picks. We're not going to get any players. We're not going to sit there and try and hold out in a guy with an expiring contract to see if some team might throw something at us. I would think we get something back instead of just basically he doesn't lose a thing. And all I can say is, well, at least we got him out of the locker room. And I get that that's a positive.
You did save $6.5 million. Like, I get that Wall's not going to lose any of it because it's going to be the mid-level exception that he signs and he's going to recoup all that $6.5 million. So he's still going to get what he wants. But John Wall has proven to you back-to-back years that he cares more about the money than he cares about where he plays or that he's playing, period. Like last year, he didn't want to accept a buyout because he didn't want to take a dime less for the contract that he signed for, and that's why he was still on the team, and the Rockets were playing hardball with him there as well. And then this year, the reason he took the $6.5 million is because he thinks he's going to recoup that with the Los Angeles Clippers as well. So, I mean, the Rockets saved the $6.5 million. You were going to pay the whatever 90-something million that he was on the books for. It is good that he is gone. One of the things that I find funny here at Blankers, though, is like the – I guess the benefit of the doubt when it comes to John Wall on the Twitter streets. Like, oh, he was such a professional. Oh, really feel great that John Wall is getting his chance to play again in the NBA. Oh, he did a lot for the Houston Rockets organization. He wasn't willing to come off the bench for you last year. What are you talking about?
Short of Carmelo Anthony, he played bitch ball. He was just like, I'm taking my ball and going home unless you do whatever I say I want to do, which is I want to start. I want minutes. We saw when he actually did have that kind of don't blink your eyes, you'll miss it moments of playing with the Houston Rockets that he needed to get his. He'd have wide open guys, both the young guys and Christian Wood, who got frustrated, but he'd look them straight away and then look them in the eye, look off, and say, well, I'm going to get mine because I got to get mine. That's not helping anybody. So he was a me-first guy that was completely self-centered on anything and everything to do with him, and you catered to him. That's where I think this is really going to become a major issue with the NBA in the next collective bargaining agreement. Not only just this ability to take rest whenever you want, you know, and load management, but more so than that, it's becoming a trend now where guys are healthy scratches making a boatload of money, and there's no ramification for it, and there's no way that anybody wants to put their foot down because it's so delicate. You're walking on eggshells. Like, I don't want to offend the player. He may never play for you again. Who cares if you offend him? I'm offended that you're making $40 million to not play, to not work, essentially.
Right. I just don't know what the Rockets could have done.
Well, you could have forced him to play and said, you're going to come off the bench.
I feel like that would have been a negative, though.
The only negative is you get money back.
If he says no?
Yeah, if he says I'm not coming off the bench and he really wants to make a stink out of it.
I don't want him to play.
I know what you meant.
Yeah.
And look, I didn't really want him to play either, especially as the roster transitioned, right? But because early on, there was thoughts that when you played Gordon and you played Wood and you played some of the veterans, that this team had a chance to see what it could possibly be, and maybe it could be better than everybody was projecting. And then they kind of pulled the plug and said, nope, we're just going with the youth movement. This is the complete rebuild. But until you got to that point, I would have pushed back and said, do you really want to play? Because you have a contract that says you have to play. Our medicals say there's nothing wrong with you. So you get into kind of a Deshaun Watson situation, but you basically say, hey, look, the way this thing is going to end, it's not going to end in a pretty fashion. It's probably not going to end in our favor, and we're probably never going to see each other again. So I can get some money back. And Tillman seems to be a guy that is not shy about getting his money back or saving money when he has to and going, hey, guess what? So you're healthy. We're saying you're coming off the bench. If you want to push back and say you're not, now we can suspend you or we can put you on the inactive and we can save money.
But you have John Wall, who wasn't willing to accept the buyout last year because he didn't want to take a dime less. You have John Wall that took the buyout here to save the Rockets $6.5 million, but he's going to get that back on the back end, so he's not losing a dime there. The Rockets could have called John Wall's bluff.
No,
and I think that he would have played, though. Like, that's the thing. I think he would have played.
That's fine.
But is it, though? Because, like, the Rockets are going to pay $46 million to John Wall last year to either play or not to play. Those are the two options. Like, you could force John Wall's hand, and you could call his bluff, but that means John Wall is going to sit on the edge of your bench and pout. So your options were either have him on the edge of the bench and pout or just tell him to go home, and you're going to pay him $46.5 million regardless.
But also, Jeremy, there's a couple things. One, it's a video resume every single game. If you do go out there and you decide, hey, I'm going to suck it up and I'm going to be the player that I'm supposed to be professionally, and I play somewhat halfway decent to good, now I might draw the interest of a team that otherwise wouldn't be interested in trying to obtain me and get something out of it.
You think the Rockets would have played him, though? Or he would have just been on the bench?
Here's the other thing that I was getting at. I think that based on what Dennis Schroeder did to this team once he finally got out there, and the fact that we knew that KPJ wasn't a point guard, the fact that you could have played him at the point, played KPJ at the two, played Green at the three, and seeing what you could really get out of the other two kids while having a veteran point guard. Now, Silas would have to get up in his grill a couple times probably and say, hey, stop looking for your shot.
Yeah.
Feed the kids.
See, that's the thing. That's my hesitation there.
But you're also reminding him, hey, other teams are watching. You're trying to play yourself into being valuable to another team. Prove you can still play in this league, but do so in our system trying to help these kids get better.
Oh, well, he's gone. Yep. He's not the Rockets' problem anymore. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So, Eric Gordon, is he gone?
He's gone by camp. He's gone before camp. From what I had heard, I thought there was a very, very strong sentiment that he would be gone on draft night, but they had so much going on in other directions that they decided that there wasn't as big of a rush to get it done. But I do believe now that these two guys are out of the locker room that and again, this is the easiest one to move because he's a good dude. He's been a really good teammate for the young kids. He's been a professional, and there are teams that want him.
He should be the one that celebrated on Twitter, not John Wall.
Phoenix, Philly, and Miami all want Eric Gordon, and that's just a start. There might be another team that comes in, whether it be a Brooklyn or a contender. The Lakers would love to have him. I just don't think they have anything that they're willing to give you unless they want to part with that first-round pick and THT. that you could get something for him. But as long as you know, there's going to be teams out there that are going to need Eric Gordon between now and whenever you decide to move him.
Yeah, I think the reason you didn't see it on draft day is because the Rockets weren't interested in more first-round draft picks this year. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if we want future draft picks, then what's the urgency of trying to deal him on draft day when we can do it next week? We can do it 2 weeks because we're really going to be targeting a 2023 first, or maybe even something later. Maybe you're looking further down the line because you have some draft capital coming up. So, like, if Morey was interested in Eric Gordon, but he's also looking at draft day deals, Rafael Stone, if he's interested in trading Eric Gordon, but he knows he doesn't want another first rounder in 2022, and he has three first round draft picks whenever he's busy, that to me was the decision. Hey, let's table this for now. And then let's kick this conversation up again in a couple weeks whenever, you know, we're not worried about this year's draft, whenever the Rockets had three, Morey and Phoenix and all these other teams are looking to get other things done as well. So that's why I don't think Eric Gordon was a draft
day deal.
Here's
the other thing it tells you, Jeremy. It's kind of like what you were talking about with the Astros, where you can kind of read the writing on the wall in terms of the direction. Mm-hmm. They didn't know how quick this rebuild was going to go, and they didn't know how quickly they were going to have to adjust their roster accordingly because they now have the core to focus on. And then based on how everything fell into place with getting Green and finding Şengün and knowing that now I've got some kids that I do want to mold that are going to be a part of my here and now, but more importantly, are going to be a part of my future. Now it's hyper important for me to get rid of all the roadblocks that might stunt their growth and keep them from developing. So now, as opposed to if you got a couple of picks that just turned out to be like Garuba's, nothing against Garuba yet, but I'm just saying, Garuba wasn't the kind of guy with the kind of reputation and evaluations that we saw from Green. And then even after Şengün came in the league, there was a lot of people high on him before he was even drafted. But if you got a couple of Garubas with a couple of draft picks, now you're like, I probably need more veterans on this team just to save face and show we can compete. Now, because it's hyper important that you develop the kids that you have for the nucleus for the future and you know who they are, you got to get these guys out of there.
Yeah, I think veterans are still like front of mind, but more bench guys playing 5-10 minutes a game that are willing to help groom
you
the
transition from veterans you're stuck with from contracts before you knew you were in rebuild to going out and finding veterans that want to be here that aren't afraid of being part of a rebuild while they do their part helping out the kids, but they're also going to reap the benefits by soaking up some minutes and some years in contracts.
713-780-ESPN if you want to weigh in. 713-780-3776. Do the Rockets get a free pass on the rest of the offseason? It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
All right, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, I love the people at Apollo Men's Health because they're great at doing whatever you need them to do as it relates to your health. Your health is your wealth. You need to invest in yourself, just like you invest in the stock market, only when you invest by going to Apollo Men's Health, they put you on a path towards success. They get you feeling like you used to feel and getting results that you've only thought you could dream of as you get older. For both men and women, it starts with hormone therapy, and there are women in the lobby all the time that are basically saying how great Apollo is and how they've gotten more energy from a day-to-day basis. Men do the same thing, and there's many different ways that you can get and administer the hormone therapy. You can do it there in the clinic every week. You can do it at home, and they'll teach you how and get you the product. Or for guys, there's cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy. You only have to go in once every 6 months. You reap the benefits every single day. You want to get on a workout program, and you want to figure out how to chart your results? Do a full body composition analysis. It only takes a minute, literally. And then you do them every 3-4 weeks, and you can chart your progress and see your body fat's gone down. See your muscle mass has gone up. See all the things that can let you know real quickly, hey, I'm making progress, even when you don't feel like you are. You want to recover quicker? HGH peptide therapy. Stuff for your smoothies and fat burners? They got those too. Two locations to better serve you in your downtown Houston. Go to ApolloMH.com. Find out all their services and book your first appointment. When you do, you'll find out most major insurance is accepted. Discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. Free B12 shot on your first official visit or a free body composition analysis. And then let them go through the process. They're going to ask you tough questions. Give them honest answers. Tell them what you're trying to achieve. They're going to put you on a program that works. They're good people doing great things. It's the people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, we'll get to the Rockets in just a second. Do the Rockets get a free pass in the rest of the offseason? Lamont tweeting us He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. He says to us that whoever is responsible for Wall is on shaky grounds. That's a whole lot of money not to play. Like, I agree with that, but like, I just don't see the alternative. Like, were you forcing Wall into a buyout last year when Wall has shown you that he's not going to accept a penny less than what is on his contract, and he's flat out said that? You could go, you know, a step further back and say, well, you should have never traded Westbrook for Wall, which is where to me, I think, is the root of the problem. I wouldn't have made that trade. Harden, I think, forced it, if we're being completely honest with you. You don't think Harden forced it?
Westbrook forced the trade. He wanted to get out, but he didn't demand where he wanted to go. And I think that that's where...
But it was because of relationships with Harden, though. Like, they didn't like...
No.
Like, well, they didn't want to play together.
It's that had that, but that could have been rectified. There was something there that could have been rectified. And I'm just going to be completely honest with you. Westbrook had a real problem with Rafael Stone when Rafael Stone was Daryl's assistant. When Westbrook was all in on the coach's search. He flew in to talk to Van Gundy and the other coaches they were interviewing. When he found out that Tillman was going to make Rafael the general manager, that's when he decided he wanted out, because he just could not see a guy with his first chance as a general manager and a guy that he already had issues with being the general manager. And that's when he forced their hand and said, I want it out. But again, because you didn't have to trade him where, like Harden said, this is where I want to go.
Sure.
You look at what Tommy Shepard, and I've said this before, you look at what Tommy Shepard in Washington turned around and flipped Russ for. He got 3 starters and 2 draft picks. You took a guy that was damaged goods with 2 major injuries and a massive contract, and I think you panicked.
Sure. I just don't know where you saved the money. Like, to me, it's a sunk cost that you have to absorb it. Well, like, you can play them, but okay, great. What does that accomplish?
You're saying after the trade was made, because
yes.
I would say don't make the trade in the first place.
Right, that's what I would agree with that. Yeah. I would agree with that. But once you had Wall, you're going to pay Wall the remainder of his contract. There was no way out of it.
Stone was enamored by seeing the videos of the workouts and thinking that John Wall could still play, that he could.
He missed on that.
Right.
But I don't think you could have saved money.
But I think that at that time, too, you have to remember, they weren't willing to admit they were in full rebuild, right? So they had Christian Wood, which they thought they got on a good deal and was going to be the double-double machine. They had John Wall, which was a former all-star point guard that they thought could find it and still have it and do enough to be a good point guard. You had Eric Gordon, who, between being sixth man of the year but being a scorer and a shooter, gives you another offensive punch. That they were still kind of on the fence as to, do we go full rebuild or can we add a few veterans here and there and make this team kind of a play-in team that has a chance to get into the playoffs for a year or two more. And that's where I think they were trying to find it. And they were also hoping James Harden changed his mind, to be quite honest.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that was a factor in all of that as well. I just don't see how you to save the money. Like, to me, the money was
the money's different.
Yeah.
But that's why I said last segment, if I'm an owner, no matter how much money I have in the bank, that has to chap your ass. The fact that you're basically giving a guy free money at almost $90 million and you don't get any return on your investment.
My pushback is I don't think you're ever going to get return on your investment. Like, I just don't see an avenue where you are getting a return.
If you essentially got him off the books for one of the 2 years.
But how? He told you he was not willing to do that.
Not from his part, Jeremy. What I'm saying is, a year ago, there was discussions the Clippers were going to find a way with some of their their role players.
Or even like the Westbrook rumor, Westbrook in a second. Or Westbrook,
right.
Even
at
a
least
first
you would get a
once.
Pick of some sort, first or second round pick, and maybe, as you would call him, a sweetener or two that isn't a great player but could help you for a year or two. And at least then as an owner, you can say, okay, I got something for him, and I didn't have to pay the full $87 million.
But I don't think that it was Stone saying no on those trades. I think it was the Lakers saying no. I think it was the Clippers saying no.
The Lakers for sure didn't want to give up a
first. Yeah, I think Stone would have signed up for that like that. I just don't see the savings. But anyways, do the Rockets get a free pass on the rest of the offseason? Like, they bought out Wall. They also had, like, let's be honest, a first round that I think all of us are very happy with. The fact that you get Jabari at number 3, who we think is the best player in the draft, was a pipe dream scenario for the Houston Rockets. You get a solid player, 3-and-D guy, I think, in Easton, who's going to be a very good defensive player. And then Ty Washington, which is a very good prospect late in the 20s. I'm not going to sit here and say that he was the steal of the draft or he's going to be the point guard of the future. I think he has a chance to be very good, and the fact that you got him in the 20s was a win for the Houston Rockets. But now that you have the remainder of the offseason, free agency is about to get kickstarted. We're going to hear a bunch of rumors here coming up pretty soon. But do the Rockets get a free pass on the rest of the offseason because of the draft, namely?
I think if they do nothing else, you can't criticize them because of the fact that whether you could have predicted or had any inkling, which I think you're lying if you said you did, that Jabari Smith was going to slide to 3, But either way, as long as Chet went too, I think that you were going to get a player fall into your lap, much like you got Green a year ago, to where you were going to be better. But that's just the start. That was the precursor. But then when you look at it and the way he was able to finagle some of the trades to still get, you know, from 26 to 29, but you added 2 seconds, you did some things to kind of even fortify the draft for the future a little bit. But on top of that, to unload, first of all, a Christian Wood that I personally have said to you multiple times, I thought the highest value you could have gotten for him in return was at the trade deadline because you didn't. I didn't know that what you could get for him in return. The fact that you still got a first, I think you did a really good job there. Then I think on top of that, whether I feel like they should have gotten more money back from Wall or not, just getting him out of the locker room and another addition by subtraction to your two biggest issues in your locker room a year ago of three. There's one that's still on the roster in KPJ. But I think you got rid of the veteran distractions that you didn't need. I still think they're going to move Gordon. And if they do, you give him even more kudos. But if they don't, there's nothing to criticize here because Gordon's not going to rock the boat. He's not a troublemaker. So I think that they do get a pass for the rest of the offseason.
I do want to see them acquire something for Eric Gordon. Like, I think that he's worth a future asset. I think he's worth a late first rounder. So that is something that I want to see be done, even though the Rockets have a good amount of draft capital coming up. Look, I'm bullish with the draft, but I think that there is a way that the Rockets can screw up this offseason. I don't think it's honestly likely. I don't think it's honestly plausible because you have the comments for Tillman Fertitta. You have the comments for Rafael Stone where they talk about building this the right way and that they're going to build it through young players and having this young nucleus and this young core. And Tillman talked about how Golden State's an example of that, how Boston is an example of that. But you just cleared the Wall contract. You could trade Eric Gordon, clear a little bit more room too. Christian Wood's salary's off the books. Although you did take some salary filler in return to make the trades work in terms of the salary cap, the only thing that would bother me with the rest of the offseason, if the Rockets go out and spend reckless money, and look, I don't think it's possible, but like Kyrie Irving opted into the deal yesterday with a $40-something million and had the, you know, profound quote whenever he opted into the money because Kyrie Irving just so smart. But, like, if you traded for Kyrie Irving, that's something that I look at as, like, I would not give that a free pass.
Sure.
If the Rockets traded for Westbrook and then extended him. If the Rockets spend money foolishly, we say the same thing with the Texans. Like, you're in a rebuild, win or lose. I mean, just develop with the young players. The Rockets are in the same boat. If they go out and, like, bring in a veteran, give him tons of money, and, like, he's taking part of the usage away from Jalen Green, that's how the Rockets could lose the rest of the offseason.
Yeah, I don't think it's probable, though.
Same.
And I think that part of the reason is if people don't understand that just because you bought John Wall out doesn't mean that that 47 comes off the books.
Yep.
So you're limited financially anyway.
More money long term.
Yeah. And so as long as you are not making a stupid deal for the future, you know, in a year's time, you're going to have all the money in the world to go get whatever veterans you want to add to fortify this roster. And you have more. I think, though, let me say this. You could actually win it even more, though it's not going to be a popular decision with some Rockets fans. But if KJ Martin doesn't want to be here and his dad doesn't want him here, and I think that there are some teams that would be willing to look at trying to get something for him too. If you get what you took, like a second round pick is what you used to take him. If you get a second in return for the future or you get a player in return to help you, then you could win it even more in my mind. And if you move Gordon and at least get a late first in return, then I think that you have absolutely not only won it, but you've exceeded expectations because Wall's off the books, not off the books, but off the roster.
Exceeded expectations. You hit it out of the park with the first round. Like, this offseason's in a really good spot. If literally, like, I'm calling for the Rockets to do nothing else. Like, don't bring in future salary. Don't ruin the cap space that you have going forward. There's a couple of other things that I want to see, but it wouldn't make or break the offseason. Eric Gordon for a late first. I want to see that. We talked about the veteran presence. Like, I don't want a veteran to be signed for this team that's going to come in and take minutes. I want an Udonis Haslem, for a lack of a better name, to be the end-of-the-bench guy. He never takes off his warm-up jacket. He's never going to play in a game, but he's there to show Jalen Green the way of life in the NBA.
He's like your intel coach, right?
He's an extension of the staff.
Yeah, he's not a coach.
Jawan Howard late in his career.
He's inside the locker room, so he knows what's being said. He's got his finger on the pulse of what's going down, and he can also police it and keep guys on the straight and narrow.
He's teaching them how to be a pro. In addition to that, he's working with them every single day, making them better in practice. So it really is an extension of the staff, but it's a veteran on the bench who I think can sometimes resonate better with the players than somebody on the staff.
I also think on top of that, and that's why I think that they should take a long, hard look at Trey Burks before they just cut him free with all the guys. They need a veteran point guard like this year's version of DJ Augustine.
He didn't have to be good.
Right. I think you have to be serviceable, because what I would like to see is, because Burks had his moments before Jalen Brunson really just exploded onto the scene, where when he played, he could do some things, but because all you need him to do is take care of the basketball and distribute so that you can see if KPJ can play the two, so you can develop Green and get him in spots where he needs the ball, you need a veteran point guard. We saw what Schroeder made a difference with this team on in terms of just doing exactly that. You get another version of a Dennis Schroeder or a DJ Augustine that can get the young kids the ball and kind of be the coach on the floor. Another coach we're talking about, a coach on the floor that can get this team in its offense. I think it's beneficial.
Yeah, the little minor things the Rockets can do the rest of the offseason.
By the way, Burks is on the books. It's his option, but it's 3.3. If he picks it up, I got no problem with it.
And it's only this year.
Yes.
I mean, you're not looking at signing free agents anyways. So, yes, the Rockets do get a free pass for the rest of the offseason, more than likely. All right, when we return, Doug Glanville, ESPN baseball analyst, very good on the game. Also, we'll talk Michael Brantley going on the injured list. We talk about that shoulder discomfort. Rumors are he's going to land on the IL and the Chaz McCormick back with the club. We'll kick that around with Doug Glanville. Talk to him about the Astros World Series chances, and is the window closing for the Houston Astros? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Warrior sound! Real. Fun sports.